Hello and welcome to Stages. I'm Regina Botros and I am so excited to bring our guest this evening. It's Jane Bodie. She's an award-winning playwright, screenwriter, director and mentor. Her works include Savage, Music, Hinterland, This Year's Ashes, A Single Act, Still Ride and Foreplay and more. She won the Victorian Premier's Literary Award in 2006 for A Single Act and a Green Room Award in 2003 for Still. She's written across TV for The Secret Life of Us, Crash Burn and Moving Wallpaper. She's written for radio. She's written for film. Alice was directed by Gareth Davies and was selected for screening at the Cannes Film Festival. She's worked as a dramaturg. She was head of playwriting at NIDA. She was the associate artist at the Griffin Theatre in 2013, associate for Playwriting Australia. She worked at the Royal Court Theatre. There's so much to talk about and I haven't even gone through her whole list there. Welcome to Stages, Jane Bodie.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you. So before we get into playwriting and the craft and, you know, inspirations, all that, I want to get a little idea of sort of where you're from. So where are you from?
Yeah, I know, it's a bit complicated. So I'm from London originally. I lived there half my life, fell in love with an Australian in my 20s, moved to Australia. But I became a playwright in Australia, so I always think it's the kind of, it's my creative home. Yeah. And actually, when I first had a play on in New York, I flew over for it and they were like, oh my God, you're English. We thought you were Australian. So I feel a little bit torn between the two countries because obviously I was brought up, my parents are from England and I was brought up there, but I became a playwright in Australia and that was kind of where I made my mark. And I think probably without Australia, I wouldn't have become a playwright. So yeah, so I'm from London, grew up there, but I started making work in Australia and that was kind of where I cut my, you know, I made all my first creative friends in Australia, really.
Okay. So your parents weren't creative or anything like that growing up for you?
No, my parents were very creative. My father is dead and my mum's got dementia, unfortunately, but they would be very annoyed were they listening to this and could hear it. My mum was a painter and my dad was a musician. I had a very creative upbringing and I'm sure that's a huge amount as well of why I'm a playwright.
Did you actually see theatre growing up?
No, I did. I mean, I was surrounded by art because my mum was a painter and there was music always because dad was a musician. My mum, so I don't know if you know Theatre de Complicité, the company, but they were a big influence on me and they actually moved into our house. They were like lodgers at my mum's house. I know, it sounds so like idyllic, creative background.
Yeah.
It was just because we needed the money and like they broke the washing machine with their huge pants and stuff. I just remember it. But yeah, so they lived in our house when I was a teenager. So the first play I ever saw was a very early play of theirs. And I think it's hugely influenced me, actually.
What was that play, before you go on? What was that?
It's called A Minute Too Late, and it was about death. And I was 11, I think. And I'm no one that mattered to me had died or that was important to me. But it was a play about dealing with death. And I think probably Simon McBurney, who was the director at the time, had lost someone close to him. And I just remember it profoundly affecting me. But now that I've lost people close to me, I now realise the significance of it and what it really meant. I think as I'm now approaching middle age, I suppose, I make work and sometimes realise it's still influenced by those kind of formative experiences. And I think a lot of artists are like that. Something stirs us, profoundly affects us, and then when we make work, we're trying to recreate that feeling again and again.
Do you keep, like, ideas? Do you actually write them down or is it sort of coming from somewhere inside of you when you do write?
I don't write them down just because I write all the time, but yeah. I think they stay in the vault of my brain. And I remember on my 30th birthday, my mum gave me a play that I'd written when I was 7, which I didn't remember. It was appallingly bad. but there were lines in it which I think sort of forced their way into my plays in my 30s. So it made me realise in some way there were obviously ideas that were sort of chugging around in my head and not really working that I just would kept going back to until they worked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You're working out through your writing.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So, I think I've been writing about similar themes for a long time. I think as you get older, certainly as a woman, they change. But I'm sure that there are things that I've been interested in or attracted to or kind of fascinated by that I've been writing about. And then they eventually find a place in the work, I think.
Okay, so there's this line between maybe a diary or something that you're actually processing, and then it comes into a life of something that can be on the stage or on the screen or otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's right. And maybe earlier on they're in works and they don't quite work, or they don't find their place in them, or they're a smaller role. And then I remember watching a great thing about the Coen brothers, and they'd have these small characters in things that would then become the kind of lead character in it. Not that I'm comparing myself to the Coen brothers, but you know, they'd have a small character that then became Barton Fink.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern did.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So they're little things that are obviously niggling. They're there. You're trying to work out what they are. And then one day they find a place. Mm. And I could trace that back to watching that first theatrical complicité play when I was 11.
That's fantastic. Wow. So did you actually study playwriting when you were in Australia? And when was this?
No, I didn't.
You just started writing?
Yeah. So I did. I ran the playwriting course at NIDA, which was scary for me because I'm not an academic. I didn't study academically and I never studied playwriting. And I may be someone that would say it's very difficult to teach playwriting, but I did run a course teaching playwriting.
So what would you teach? Yeah.
Well, in a way, the whole experience was me working out how do you teach playwriting in a way. And my students were fabulous. And I just lost my dad, so I was a very kind of sad person, but I was desperately clinging on to like the notion that I would still make work. And then, you know, I had 6 students a year because it was a postgraduate diploma, and a lot of them are now very successful playwrights. And I'm not for a second saying that was me, but they were a brilliant bunch of people to be engaged with very intensely for a year at a time. I think I realized that what I could teach was articulation. So I couldn't teach them imagination or creativity. I helped them with process. Mm-hmm. I probably made them read a lot of plays that they wouldn't necessarily have read. Mm-hmm. My big thing was like, who are you as a writer? Not who are you as a person, but who are you as a writer? And what can you do that no one else can do? And I think a lot of the students were kind of obsessed with writing great dialogue because they'd watched, you know, Tarantino films or some equivalent. Mm-hmm. And my thing was, great dialogue is great, but that doesn't make you a great playwright. The kind of ideas at the heart of your pieces are what's going to make you stand out. And I think in the end, I taught them sort of discipline. I sort of taught them that they should treat it like a job, as in they should write from morning till evening as if it was their job. And I would really encourage them to write in a way that no one else did. So the thing they were afraid of, and often they had influences and they were trying to write like them. And I was like, I've kind of seen it before because I've read a lot of plays. So the thing that they did that was like no one else, I'd really nurture. And I would help them articulate their ideas. And I think that could be taught.
Was there a pivotal point? Was that the pivotal point for you in your development of a creative that made you maybe analyze your own writing as a consequence of doing that?
I'm sure it did. I mean, I came from the Royal Court where I was teaching playwriting at the Royal Court amongst, you know, Simon Stevens and Leo Butler and some incredible playwrights. And before I left England, because I was at the Royal Court and the playwright was very respected, I then came to Australia where I have to say at the time the director was kind of God. When I got to NIDA, the playwrights were like the kind of weird Smiths fans in the corner of the building, you know, with long coats and kind of smoking roll-ups, who were sort of seen as the, like, you know, they created something but the director had to come along and make it work. And my thing was like, this isn't the case. You know, we are the beginning of the process and our ideas may not come out perfectly formed, but they are the thing that begins to matter and therefore they should be respected. So I think it helped me teach NIDA that. I think in a way they became much stronger in the building and were respected a lot more. I really taught the actors to work with new work in a way that they hadn't. And I think for me as a writer, I took away from it in the end when I left. So I did my 3-year contract and then I was like, I need to leave. Mm. Not in any bad way, but just I need to go and make my own work now. I think I knew what we needed as playwrights to kind of survive, really.
So you do a lot of mentoring. Was there someone that was influential to you and mentored you or guided you?
There are so many people. So my mum was a painter and I grew up with an artist who, you know, often our dinner was burnt or not arrived because she was in her studio painting. So on that level, I knew that there was something else other than being a mother. So I suppose that was helpful. And then I worked with a bunch of brilliant actors really early on in Melbourne. I really lucked out. Fiona McLeod, Ben Grant and Laura Sheedy, we ended up sort of falling into this mental theatre company. And at the time, we just all liked each other. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know that we were all going to become artists in our own right. So they were very influential because they helped me develop my plays. And then I think the director, Julian Merrick, he worked on a really early play of mine. And he was like the cleverest man I'd ever met. And he wasn't always right, I worked out later on. But but he was very respectful. Really early on, when I was sort of fledgling, he said, you know, you're a really good writer, you know, and he would come and say, explain to me how this works and what it means, which I have to say later on in my career, when I was much more established and successful, directors were not that respectful. And he has mentored me for many years. And then he directed a play of mine last year, Lamb, at the Red Stitch, with songs by Mark Seymour. And it was so beautiful to come back and work with him after like 20 years. And he's such a respectful director. I'm not saying that always there has to be that respect to make the work, but it was so lovely to work with someone that smart and delicate and genuinely interested in what I'm trying to do. Not that we would absolutely disagree and have long conversations into the night, but it was so lovely to come back. And probably I was at the age that he was when he first met me. So that he's probably quite significant.
You're listening to Stages. I'm Regina Botros, and I am talking with Jane Bodie, award-winning playwright, screenwriter, director, and mentor.
Do you think that's changed, that director playwright, in your, like, what your observations, I suppose, over the time? I mean, you've worked also, and you're in the UK now, so maybe there's a difference, like you say, between the UK and here. But do you think you've observed a change between the god of the director and the playwright now?
I don't know. I hope it's changing. I think it is changing, because I think I talked to Andrew Bovell about this a couple of years ago, because we became friends through lots of reasons. But a few years ago, I was in England, and he came over because he was doing a play here, and we went out and had a sort of lovely late summer pub dinner. And I said, how's it been? And he said, I think here it's, in some ways in England, easier as a playwright, in that you're sort of more respected in the room and, you know, given a bit more weight. I mean, there is a history of playwrights being significant in England. And, you know, older playwrights in England are still, you know, Carol Churchill, people really carry weight and respect. Whereas I feel in Australia, it's the kind of new guys coming up that get the heat around them. And I think older playwrights are potentially seen as being a bit old fashioned. I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but I feel that it is potentially changing, because I feel there's a new wave of playwrights coming through who aren't the white middle class male. And they're coming at playwriting from a different sort of angle and a different way and a new method of storytelling. And that's Indigenous playwrights and, you know, playwrights from different kind of cultures, walks of life, class. And I feel that's going to change the process in the room. And we won't be able to have someone coming in and saying, this is how I'm going to, this is what I'm going to do to your play. And I think that's fantastic. I just don't quite know how that's going to, I don't know what the future is. And at the moment, COVID, especially, it's like we're so on hold. No one knows, you know, what we're turning into, I think.
So can you talk to me a little bit about the method of playwriting and what you maybe find as your inspirations or the way that you work?
Sure. It's changed quite a bit, and it's certainly changing at the moment. It used to be, and I kind of know this more clearly through teaching, and I've just done these mad Zoom playwriting masterclasses in the last few months with lots of Australian playwrights, which has been so brilliant. It used to be for me that I would absolutely start all on my own from an idea or something going on in the world, and then sort of bring it together with an idea of mine and then take that out into the world and say, is anyone interested? Yeah. When I started out, I had my own theatre company. So I had the luxury of making work, you know, for very, very cheaply and putting it on, which was a great starting place. And I always say to playwrights, if they haven't had a play on, that's what you should how you should start. Mm-hmm. And then I had the luxury of having a few successful plays. So then I would be approached by companies and they would say, we want to do a play of yours. Okay. And then that either became that I would then go to them with some ideas, or they would say, we want to play about this, can you do it? Which still happens. And then it's really interesting, because then I have to go away and make sure I give a shit about what they're asking me to write. Because as I get older and life becomes more precious, I kind of think, do I want to spend a year writing about something I don't care about? You know, we don't get paid that much as playwrights. Yeah. There's no point in me devoting a year to something I don't care about. I think at the beginning I would have done it just for the experience. But for now I go, you know, if I'm going to spend a year devoted to this subject or theme or sort of style, do I care enough to kind of devote a year to it? So now it's more a case of a theatre approaching me and saying, we want this play, do you want to do it? Or me coming together with a group of people or a theatre company and saying, let's make this piece of work. And then I tend to go away and I don't do loads of research, which is controversial, I know, but I tend to just write sort of mess for about a month. Mm-hmm. And then a story will emerge out of it. And then that becomes my first draft, which is normally a terrible mess with lots of beauty. And then I'll read it out loud with a group of actors. And then I go away and really begin to work.
So if someone comes and says, I want to put on your play Ride or something from your past, will you go and look at that again and change it? Or is it done?
Oh, that's such a good question. So 3 years ago, or maybe a bit longer, 5 years ago, a beautiful director called Anthony Skews, who's a Sydney director and also has become a colleague of mine, he got the Darlinghurst Theatre wanted to do a play of mine. And then they decided to do a double bill
of
Ride.
Yes.
Yeah, which were like plays I wrote like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my God, they might be awful. I mean, I didn't really think that. It's like reading old love letters, right? You just think, what was I, you know? so I went and read them. And I mostly thought they were good. I thought they were a bit overwritten. I think I'm more economical now. I think there were lines in them that I occasionally thought, ooh. But I thought, if I'm going to go in and start taking out an odd line here, an odd line there, you know, I'm in a way, I'm kind of wrecking the beginnings of those works and what they were at the time. So in the end, I got on very well with Anthony. I knew him anyway. And I said, can I be in the rehearsal room? And interestingly, we chose to cut the same lines together.
Okay.
So I think we just slightly streamlined the pieces. And also Ride didn't feel dated, but Foreplay did. Okay. Because it was very set in Melbourne and the shows were on in Sydney. So we transferred it, but it just felt very dated. There were kind of ideas in it that even felt dated. Mm-hmm. And of course, there were no mobile phones or kind of computers in either of the plays. Mm-hmm. So they felt sort of somehow frozen in another time. But we thought we're just going to go with that because that's what the plays are about.
Yeah. Well, Ride is the one that I remember. See, I was artistic director of Short and Sweet for that year and the second year running, and it's a play. Like I read so many plays, hundreds of plays, and that is one that I remember. It's that what happens is, you know, the waking up of the couple. But what's more important or interesting about it is at that time it was the 10-minute version, but there was so much time in the play. It transitioned over so many years, and I thought it was more than just that, like you say, the dialogue. There's something else in there.
It was a play set in one room over 24 hours, but actually it was sort of about how men and women relate to each other, you know, and have done for years and probably still do. Yeah. And so it was, I mean, it was kind of very, it was, I went, so when it was on a few years ago, I was in my 40s, but I wrote it in my 20s. And it was about a kind of sexual interaction where, you know, it feels like this might be the first love of your life and the kind of last. And yet, you know, when you walk out the door, it's just going to be over.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like that anymore. And I'm not certainly not that brave sexually or romantically anymore. I remember getting interviewed because it was kind of quite a smash hit at the time.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it, as a play, you know, no, yes. I wasn't in magazines, but, you know, actors knew it. But I got interviewed and I didn't know at the time that you had to be careful about what you said in interviews. And I just in interviews sort of talked about sexual liberation. And in the end, there were loads of interviews with like, it was like me just being like, I was kind of like represented as a kind of tart, really, which in the end, I thought it doesn't matter. But it was like I was saying I thought it was really important for women to have sexual encounters in which, you know, they weren't in love with the partner for their kind of own development. But it was slightly taken out of context. But yes, it was a very interesting play to go back to. And although I would never write anything like that now because life has become about much more to me now in my 40s, I still knew the person that I was when I wrote it, and I still was really touched by it. And I suppose that's all that matters, isn't it?
Do you ultimately write about your life?
I think I've written like I was trying to work this out the other day because a student asked me. I've written 19 plays. So okay. I reckon probably my first four were much more about me and my experiences. And then after a while, you think, no one wants to hear about me. But you can't help but the thing, the important things in your life always have a place in the work, even if it's not overtly. So my mum has got dementia and is kind of in her last stages. And I lost my dad 10 years ago. And so without overtly writing about that, I've often been writing about significant people being absent, I think, in the last few years. And so the play may not be about dementia or losing a parent, although I've written both of those plays. You know, it becomes about different things. In the way that authors start writing about having children or not having children when that happens, or, you know, and if I write about relationships now, I write about a very different kind of relationship because I've had a lot more complicated relationships than those kind of first relationships in your 20s. So I don't think I write overtly about myself. Having said that, when I wrote Lamb, which was set on an Australian sheep farm, which is obviously not my life, and with songs by Mark Seymour, there was an amazing night where a woman came up to me and said, you obviously grew up on a sheep farm. And I wanted to run away because I was so touched by that comment. But I said, I didn't. And she said, oh, my God, are you not even Australian? And I was like, no, I'm not. But I said to her, but listen, as a playwright and as a playwright of my age, it is my job to really know the world. Mm. And I understand all kinds of human beings, and so I should as a playwright. But I went and stayed on a sheep farm, and I invited some sheep farmers very early on to the play. And I just said, if there's anything like grossly inaccurate, please tell me, because I don't want to be.
And was there? Was there anything?
No. They said there were like four terms that I'd used that were like obviously very North London. And there were a couple of things that they just said that wouldn't happen, but that was it. Right. They said it was felt very much like it was written by someone who'd grown up on a sheep farm. And that's like, that's a real honour, and that is what I should be able to do as if I'm a good playwright, I think.
So is there a production that you're most kind of proud of or that was most challenging for you to write?
I wrote a play called A Single Act, which was probably put on, it was probably put on like embarrassing, like 20, well, maybe like 15 years ago, maybe, So it was put on by, well, it was put on in England first, even though I wrote it in Australia and it was developed in Sydney by the Sydney Theatre Company. They didn't then do it. And then the Hampstead Theatre in London did it in rep with a play by Dennis Kelly, and it caused a big stir, and it went very, very well. And then I think Julian Merrick championed it, and it was picked up by the MTC. Up until then, I'd written a lot of comedy and probably plays that would be perceived in some way as romantic comedies. And that's I was kind of loved for writing about sort of sexual relationships and women and men being different. And A Single Act was about domestic violence and violence, really, in the world affecting intimacy. And I made a very conscious choice. It had like funny moments and a sort of black humour, but I made a very conscious choice not to sort of look away from the violence at the heart of the piece. And the fact that I think within Australia, there is a lot of misogyny and violence against women. And I think I am someone that I don't like making people uncomfortable. But with that play, I thought, I really want to do this unflinchingly. And interestingly, I'm not sure the MTC audience at the time appreciated it, but my sort of peers and colleagues and people I really respected who I think hadn't respected me before really loved it. And then it won the Premier Literary Awards, which was like such a moment of pride for me, because that, you know, that's not about the production, it's about the work. And it is a play of mine that I often tell people to read, although I think it's out of print because I think no one bought it. But I think you can buy it from like Australian Plays, but it's a difficult play. You know, it's not an easy read. It's not a warm hug about, you know, intimacy. And when it gets difficult, I don't make jokes, which probably in my life I do. And so I'm proud of it. And I always look back to it, even though I wrote it that long ago, and think, remember, you can do this.
So is it hard to get into that? Like, I imagine as a playwright that you actually have to kind of live the world that you're creating as you're writing it.
Well, I think everyone assumed when I wrote that play I was in a domestically violent relationship, which I really was not. My boyfriend at the time was fabulous, and I probably was the grumpier.
So you don't have to live it to write it, no?
No, I didn't have to live it.
I mean, to feel the emotion that you're writing, I mean, is it like to imagine what it feels like?
Yeah, indeed. I think, look, I mean, in a way that play was an exploration of the violence in the world externally, how is that affecting us? And, you know, it was post September the 11th. And in a way, it was a response to that in a kind of, if we live in a world where people jump out of buildings because they're terrified for their own lives, or people will fly a plane into a building and die as a result of their faith. Mm. In a way, I was exploring that more than just domestic violence. Okay. So then I'm just a woman questioning our kind of response to the world we live in.
Yeah.
Which I think is my duty as a playwright, mm-hmm. and certainly as a woman. So, yeah, it was a really, I mean, look, I pulled muscles in my face when I wrote that play. Because writing Scott, who is essentially beating his partner to death, but I knew I had to write him with kind of grace and compassion, even though I knew he was a deeply damaged individual that was, you know, would ultimately kill his partner, were she not to leave. But, you know, it felt like a really important thing for me to do as a woman and as a playwright. Mm. And people that came and saw it came up to me afterwards and said, look, I lived in a violent relationship for years, and that's the most truthful and compelling portrayal of it I've seen. And I just thought, brilliant, that's brilliant, because I've done my job. I found it chilling to watch. And in a way, when I read it now, it feels like it didn't come out of me. I'm really proud of that play. And I often, when I'm like cutting corners, and by that I mean making compromises in order to make things more palatable, I think, remember A Single Act, Jane, and you wrote that 20 years ago, a lot less had happened to you. So, yes, that is probably the work I'm most proud of.
I suppose, yeah, I think plays like that open conversations, which is what's the most important thing about it. How is that relationship between you, the playwright, and then seeing it lived on stage?
Sometimes great and sometimes not so great. Yeah, and you think as you get more famous, whatever that means, I'm not more famous now, but as more successful, that you're going to have more power, and interestingly, you don't. I think it's really good. I mean, the best thing is when you see a version and it's not what you imagined, but it still works and you still like it. That's kind of better in a way than when it's exactly what you saw in your head and you love it, because that's kind of controlling. And, you know, when I made my own shows and directed my own shows, I just loved everything about them because it was all to my own taste. Of course. But the world is bigger than that, and you have to let go. And, you know, I've met great directors who have come along and added amazing levels and things to my work that I haven't seen. But I've also seen productions where I thought you just misunderstood it, which shall remain nameless. But I think sometimes the subtext is missed. And if you've spent days creating a kind of subtle nuance under what's being said, and then they don't get it, it's just, you know, it's like, I don't know I think of a great metaphor. But I just love actors, I do. And I just think as playwrights, we should write roles that actors should kill for, you know, always. And I really respect actors. And I always, even if I write small roles, I always try and write roles that they'll just be like, oh, this is delicious, you know. And having said it's directors, I've had amazing relationships with directors too. I just think we should have equal respect for each other's kind of roles. It's a really interesting one. And as I get older, I get less tolerant, but I also get more adventurous, oddly. Okay. So I kind of think, you know, if a 20-year-old director approaches me, which sometimes happens, and says, I want to do your play, I think, great, go for it.
Totally. So the theatres have been the hardest hit. And I suppose they're the things that reflect us back to each other, ourselves, I mean. What would you say about the importance of theatre? And the arts?
Well, two things. One is that, I mean, I moved back to London for my mum, but everything that matters to me but a lot of what matters to me in London is theatre. And at the moment, there's no theatre in London. So I kind of think, why would you be in London?
Yeah.
Like, and my husband's a musician, and both of what we do isn't happening. So London feels like a place without a beating heart at the moment.
Right.
I mean, it really, like, why would you live in London? It's crowded. And everyone's frightened of getting COVID, and there's no theatre and music to, you know, release our spirits and feed our souls. I just don't know why you'd live in London at the moment. I've never felt like that. So it's like we've removed the very heart of what it is to be in London, other than the fact it's very multicultural, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, nothing is being expressed. So I think that. I also think in times like these, it will be theatre that will save us from our own kind of exploding, you know, insular minds. And when things start being written either about COVID or absolutely not about COVID, which will allow us to escape the kind of monotony and horror of it. We will begin to feel like we can reflect on it and talk about it. And because nothing is happening in art at the moment, I just feel there's no conversation being had about it.
Yeah.
In an interesting way. At the moment, it's just facts, figures, data, and fear, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's too much.
It's too much and none of us can take it. There's no dreaming, no conversation about what will happen or what will, you know. And everyone I know that I have huge respect for is terrified for their life in terms of their life's work, which is terrifying.
Yeah. On the other up hand, you were recently longlisted in the Women's Prize for, is that right? Longlist, shortlisted Women's Prize for Playwriting. And so great to see so many female playwrights is what I thought.
Brilliant. Yeah, I had this really shit week where loads of horrible things had happened. Like my play Lamb is supposed to be on tour now and that's been cancelled. And so it was just a week of like disappointments as everyone is going through. And then I just got this email saying I'd been longlisted. So longlisted kind of feels like, so 1,170 women applied. Everyone can apply if they're a woman for it. And you just have to send in a full length play. And I entered a play, a new play, and they picked 70. So I don't know what the maths on that is, but it's a pretty good hit rate, says my husband. So now we're waiting for to be shortlisted, and it's all new because it's inaugural year. So,
and are you writing now? Are you writing?
I'm sort of writing. I'm kind of trying to get fit and get strong for what's coming. We all did the kind of biscuit, few months of biscuits. And I'm trying not to be sad and afraid. And often I would work to make myself not feel that. But at the moment, that feels quite hard because I don't know what I'm writing or working for. I'm writing a play for Belinda McClory and Louise Siverson because they wrote to me about 6 months ago and they're two of my favourite actresses. And I know Belinda, but I didn't know Louise. And they said, would you write us a play? Because we love you and think your plays are amazing. And I was like, what better email could I get? Unless it came with a fee. But I kind of think, okay, I'll just make the work I want to make because no one's paying me to do anything else. And maybe some great work will come out of it.
Jane Bodie, thank you so much for your time this evening, I'll say.
Lovely pleasure. And such great questions, by the way.
Thank you so much. Jane Bodie is an award-winning playwright, screenwriter, director, and mentor. And it was an absolute pleasure to have a chat with her.